A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He says we touched on dumpster diving in the construction waste episode, and now he wants to know the wider world of it. What are the genuinely wild things people find? Where do the serious divers congregate? Is there an actual skill to this? And how often does a committed diver go out? Basically, he's asking what the subculture actually looks like once you step past the ballot pile.
I love this question, because dumpster diving sits at this strange intersection of anti-consumerist philosophy, practical survival skill, and outright treasure hunting. And the numbers on what gets thrown away are staggering.
Give me the numbers.
The USDA has estimated that 30-40% of the entire US food supply ends up as waste. That's not just household scraps. That's grocery stores, restaurants, distribution centers. A 2023 Refidee report put the retail food waste figure at about 5 million tons annually in the United States alone. And we're not talking about spoiled milk here. We're talking about food that's been pulled from shelves because the Best Buy date is tomorrow, or because the packaging got slightly dented.
The dumpster behind a Trader Joe's is essentially a pantry with extra steps.
A pantry that someone else has already curated for you, yes. And food is the entry point for most people, but it's barely scratching the surface. There's a whole taxonomy of what people find. Electronics is enormous. Retail chains will throw out returned items rather than restock them, because the reverse logistics cost more than the item is worth to them.
I've heard about this with Amazon returns specifically.
There was a 2024 investigation by a Canadian news outlet, CBC, that documented Amazon destroying millions of returned items annually, not donating, not liquidating, sending them straight to disposal. Perfectly functional vacuum cleaners, laptops, kitchen appliances. Divers who target these kinds of commercial waste streams have pulled out brand new items still in the packaging.
Define brand new. Are we talking still in shrink wrap new?
Still in shrink wrap. Still with the manufacturer's seal. Items that were never opened by the customer who returned them. Amazon's system simply flags them for disposal because processing the return is more labor-intensive than writing it off. And here's where it gets legally interesting. Once something is placed in a dumpster that's accessible to the public, in most U.S. jurisdictions, it's considered abandoned property. The Supreme Court ruling in California v. Greenwood, 1988, established that there's no reasonable expectation of privacy for trash left at the curb.
The legal framework is actually on the diver's side, at least partially.
Trespassing is still trespassing. If a dumpster is behind a locked gate or marked with no trespassing signs, you're in a different legal situation. But the dumpster itself, if it's accessible without breaking and entering, generally doesn't carry an expectation of privacy. That said, divers should still know their local ordinances. Some cities have specifically criminalized dumpster diving despite the Greenwood precedent.
Let me pull us back to the finds, because that's where the prompt really pointed. What are the most unhinged things people have actually documented pulling out of dumpsters?
I went through the r/dumpsterdiving subreddit, which as of mid-2026 has about 480,000 members. The community's been growing steadily. It was around 350,000 in 2023. And the finds people post are meticulously documented with photographs and locations.
Of course they are. Reddit is Reddit.
Here's a sample. Someone in Ohio in late 2024 pulled a fully functional commercial espresso machine from behind a coffee shop that was renovating. Retail value around $4,000. The only thing wrong with it was a cracked drip tray. Another diver in Texas found 27 unopened boxes of high-end skincare products behind a department store. Total retail value estimated at over $3,000, because the packaging had been redesigned and the old stock was just tossed.
The packaging redesign one gets me. The product is identical.
Identical product, new box. The old boxes go in the trash. There was a well-documented case in 2023 where a diver in Colorado found a dumpster behind a Barnes & Noble containing hundreds of books. The store had overordered for a promotion, and the publisher didn't want returns, so the store was instructed to dispose of them rather than ship them back. The covers were ripped off in some cases, which is standard practice for mass-market paperbacks that get stripped for return credit. But these were hardcovers that got the same treatment.
Covering the covers.
And the community calls this destroyed for credit. The store rips the cover off, sends it back to the publisher as proof the book was destroyed, and the rest goes in the trash.
That's upsetting. So what about cash and valuables? I assume people have found money.
Cash finds are surprisingly common. There was a post that went viral in early 2025 about a diver in Michigan who found a shoebox containing roughly $8,000 in cash inside a dumpster behind an apartment building during a move-out week. The prevailing theory was that an elderly resident had hidden it, and the family clearing out the apartment just threw the box away without checking.
Move-out weeks are apparently the prime season for this.
College towns in May and August are gold mines. Students leaving dorms and off-campus housing throw away perfectly good furniture, electronics, unopened food, textbooks. There's actually a term for it in the community. Alston Christmas, named after a neighborhood in Boston with a high student population, where the streets and dumpsters fill with discarded items during the August moving frenzy.
That's perfect.
Beyond the practical finds, there's a whole category of what the community calls weird dumpster wins, a working theremin. Someone in 2024 found an entire collection of vintage military medals from World War II. Another diver found a box of personal letters dating from the 1940s. Love letters, essentially, that had been thrown out during an estate cleanout.
That last one feels less like a win and more like an archival rescue.
That's actually a significant sub-movement within the diving community. There are people who specifically target estate cleanouts and business closures looking for historical documents, photographs, and ephemera that would otherwise be lost. They've recovered everything from 19th century daguerreotypes to original architectural blueprints for buildings that no longer exist.
It's not just people looking for a free lunch. There's a preservationist angle.
An environmental one. A 2024 study in the journal Waste Management estimated that dumpster diving and food rescue efforts in the United States divert approximately 1.2 million tons of edible food from landfills annually. That's not trivial. And the EPA has noted that food waste in landfills is a significant methane producer. Landfills account for about 17% of U.S. methane emissions.
Divers are, whether they frame it this way or not, doing a form of direct action emissions reduction.
And the Freegan movement, which really coalesced in the early 2000s, makes this the explicit philosophical framework. Freeganism is a portmanteau of free and vegan, though not all freegans are vegan. The core idea is an anti-consumerist boycott of the economic system, with dumpster diving as the primary means of acquiring food and goods without participating in what they see as wasteful capitalism.
Freeganism always struck me as one of those movements that makes perfect sense on paper, and then gets weird the moment you try to explain it at a dinner party.
The dinner party where half the food came from, a dumpster behind Whole Foods, presumably.
The other half from a dumpster behind Williams-Sonoma.
To the prompt's question about where people congregate online, r/dumpster diving on Reddit is the largest single hub, with those 480,000 members. It's got a detailed wiki, location-specific guides, and a strict code about not posting store names or specific addresses to avoid attracting attention that might get dumpsters locked.
Smart operational security.
It's a community that takes OPSEC seriously, yes. Beyond Reddit, there are active forums on sites like TrashWiki and Falling Fruit. Falling Fruit is particularly interesting. It's a global map of urban foraging locations, and it includes dumpster locations that users have tagged as consistently productive. It started as a fruit tree mapping project and expanded.
It's a crowdsourced intelligence platform for trash.
And on Facebook, there are dozens of regional diving groups. Dumpster Diving Network, Freegan Exchange, city-specific groups for places like Portland, Austin, and Philadelphia. These are more private than the Reddit community, often requiring approval to join because they're used for coordinating group dives and sharing locations that aren't meant to be publicly searchable.
So this is a social activity.
Very much so. There are organized group dives in most major U.S. cities. In New York, the Freegan community has been running regular trash tours since around 2005. Guided group dives where experienced divers take newcomers to known locations and teach them the basics. These happen weekly in some neighborhoods. The New York Freegan Group's website still lists the schedule as of 2026.
The branding is impeccable.
In person, there's an annual event called the Really Really Free Market that happens in multiple cities. It's essentially a pop-up market where everything is free and a significant portion of the items come from dumpster diving. The original one started in Miami in 2004 and the model has spread. San Francisco, New York, Austin, Toronto, they all have versions.
The prompt asked about skill. Is there genuine technique here, or is this just opening lids and hoping?
There is absolutely technique. Serious divers develop a knowledge base that's surprisingly deep. They know the waste management schedules for their target areas. Which days are pickup days? Which stores do inventory on which days? When the best time to hit a particular dumpster is? A common recommendation is to go shortly after store closing, but before the garbage trucks arrive in the early morning.
Timing is the first layer.
Timing is critical. The second layer is knowing which types of businesses are worth your time. Grocery stores are the most common target, but there's a hierarchy. High-end grocery chains tend to be more wasteful because they have stricter cosmetic standards for produce and more aggressive stock rotation. Discount grocery chains often have less waste because their model is built on selling through inventory. Bakeries and bagel shops are considered reliable because they bake fresh daily and dispose of everything at close. Pharmacies and drugstores are hit or miss, but can yield expensive over-the-counter items and cosmetics.
What about the actual physical technique?
Experienced divers carry a specific kit. A grabber tool, those long-reach mechanical arms, is nearly universal. Heavy-duty gloves, obviously. A headlamp for night dives, which are preferred both for discretion and because that's when fresh stock gets tossed. Many carry a step stool or a small collapsible ladder because commercial dumpsters are tall. And they learn to read the dumpster from the top layer. You can tell whether a dumpster has been recently used, whether someone else has already been through it, whether it's mostly food or mostly packaging. There's an art to assessing a dumpster in about 10 seconds before you commit to climbing in.
The 10-second dumpster assessment. That's a skill I didn't know existed.
The frequency question from the prompt, how often the serious diver goes out, varies a lot. I've seen divers on the subreddit who report going out 3 to 5 nights a week, treating it as their primary method of grocery acquisition. Others go once a week on a specific route. Some are seasonal. There's a phenomenon called curb shopping. During spring cleaning and move-out seasons where divers will drive through residential neighborhoods looking for furniture and goods left at the curb, and they'll do that daily for a couple of weeks and then not at all for months.
Curb shopping is distinct from dumpster diving.
The community makes a distinction. Curb shopping is items left out for bulk pickup or free taking. Dumpster diving is going into the receptacle itself. Curb shopping has even fewer legal gray areas. Items at the curb are almost universally considered abandoned and free for the taking. Some municipalities even encourage it as a form of waste reduction.
What are the risks? Beyond the obvious, it's a dumpster.
The physical risks are real. Sharp objects, broken glass, needles in some areas. Food contamination is a concern. Divers need to know what's safe to take and what isn't. The general rule for food is that packaged items with intact seals are fine. Produce that can be thoroughly washed is usually fine, but anything with dairy, meat, or seafood that hasn't been temperature controlled requires serious caution. Most experienced divers won't touch meat or dairy unless they can verify it's still cold and was just put out.
What about the social risk?
That's actually one of the more interesting dimensions. The subreddit is full of posts from people who are anxious about being seen, about what neighbors or passersby will think. There's a persistent stigma, even though the practice has become more visible and somewhat more accepted over the last decade. Some divers go very late at night specifically to avoid encounters. Others have had positive interactions. Store employees who don't mind or even help, fellow divers who become friends. Police encounters happen. Usually, it's a trespassing warning and being told to move along. Arrests are rare for dumpster diving specifically, but they do occur, particularly if the diver is on private property or if the officer decides to escalate. The community advice is always the same. Be polite, leave immediately if asked, know your local laws, but don't argue with police on the spot.
There's a whole etiquette to this.
The unwritten code is extensive. Leave the area cleaner than you found it. If you make a mess, the dumpster gets locked and the whole community loses access. Don't take more than you need. Don't sell what you find. This is a big one. The community generally frowns on reselling dumpster finds for profit. It's considered a violation of the freakin' ethos, though people do it anyway, and there's endless debate about it on the forums.
The don't sell rule is interesting because it suggests this is a gift economy, not just scavenging.
And the community self-polices. If someone posts about a location that's been particularly good, the comments will often remind them to be vague about the location, so it doesn't get burned. There's a shared understanding that these resources are finite and fragile. One complaint from a store manager, one incident of someone leaving a mess, and a reliable dumpster gets locked or removed.
It's a commons. A trash commons.
A trash commons. That's exactly the right framing, and like any commons, it requires stewardship.
Let me ask about the extreme end of this. What's the most valuable single find anyone's documented?
There's a case from 2022 that still gets referenced. A diver in California found a working Rolex Submariner in a dumpster behind a storage facility. The facility had auctioned off a delinquent unit, and the buyer apparently threw out a box of what they thought was junk. The watch was verified authentic by a dealer. Estimated value was around $9,000.
In a dumpster.
There was also a widely circulated story from 2024 about a diver in Florida who found a sealed box containing a mint-condition first edition of The Great Gatsby without its dust jacket, sold at auction for just under $4,000.
The dust jacket is always the difference between nice find and actually valuable with old books.
But the more common valuable finds are consistent and less dramatic. Consumer electronics that just need a simple repair. Furniture that needs reupholstering. Bicycles that need a new chain. The skill component isn't just in finding things, it's in knowing what's fixable and having the ability to fix it.
Dumpster diving plus basic repair skills equals a kind of parallel economy.
For some people, it is a parallel economy. There are divers who have furnished their entire apartments from dumpster finds, others who haven't paid for groceries in years. During the period after the pandemic, when inflation was high, the subreddit saw a significant influx of new members who weren't ideologically freegan, but were simply trying to stretch their budgets.
Economic pressure pushes people toward the margins of the formal economy.
The margins, in this case, are overflowing with perfectly good stuff. There's an environmental writer named Edward Humes who wrote a book called Garbology. He calculated that the average American generates about 7 pounds of trash per day, and that roughly 60% of what goes into landfills could have been recycled, composted, or reused. The dumpster diving community is essentially doing manual resource recovery that our waste management systems are failing to do.
They're performing a public service that doesn't get recognized as one.
In some places, it's starting to get recognized. France passed a law in 2016 that requires supermarkets over a certain size to donate unsold food to charities rather than destroying it. Italy has a similar law. Several U.S. states have tax incentives for food donation. These policies are, in effect, institutionalizing what dumpster divers have been doing informally for decades.
Though I imagine some divers would resist the institutionalization. Part of the appeal seems to be that it operates outside formal systems.
There's a strong libertarian streak in parts of the diving community, people who don't want the practice regulated or formalized. They see it as a form of direct action that loses something when it becomes a charity program with paperwork and compliance requirements.
The anarchist to non-profit pipeline is always a tense one.
That tension plays out in the community regularly. Should divers work with food banks? Should they advocate for policy changes? Or should they just keep doing what they're doing quietly and not draw attention? There's no consensus.
What about the international dimension? Is this a US-centric phenomenon?
Not at all. Germany has a very active dumpster diving scene, though it's technically illegal there. The German courts have ruled that items in trash containers remain property until collected by waste services. That makes it a form of theft under German law. Despite that, the practice is widespread, particularly in cities like Berlin and Hamburg. The UK has a strong freegan movement centered in London. Australia and New Zealand have active communities. In parts of Asia, the practice exists, but is often more stigmatized and less organized.
Anywhere with a consumer economy is going to have consumer waste. The specific legal frameworks differ, but the dumpsters are full everywhere.
And the community adapts to local conditions. In countries where it's more heavily policed, divers are more secretive, and the online communities are more locked down. In places where it's tolerated or ignored, the scene is more open and social.
to pull this together for the prompt. The dedicated divers are going out multiple times a week. They've got routes and schedules. They're carrying specialized equipment, and they're finding everything from tonight's dinner to vintage military medals to the occasional Rolex. The main online hub is Reddit, with nearly 500,000 members, plus regional Facebook groups and platforms like Falling Fruit for location mapping. And there's a genuine skill set involving timing, business tech knowledge, rapid dumpster assessment, food safety judgment, and repair abilities.
That's the summary. And I'd add that the philosophical dimension matters. Whether someone comes to this through freeganism, environmentalism, economic necessity, or just the thrill of the find, they tend to develop a pretty sharp critique of the wastefulness of consumer culture. You can't spend much time pulling perfectly good items out of dumpsters without starting to question the system that put them there.
The dumpster gaze, as I've called it before.
The dumpster gaze, exactly. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. You start noticing the waste everywhere. The grocery store pulling bread off shelves at 6 p.m. The office building throwing out perfectly good furniture during a renovation. The clothing store slashing and discarding unsold inventory.
The slashing of clothing is one that always gets me. Brands would rather destroy their own products than let someone have them for free.
Burberry was publicly criticized for this a few years back. They burned unsold merchandise worth nearly $40 million in a single year rather than allow it to be sold at a discount or donated. The public backlash was significant and they changed their policy, but the practice continues across the industry in less visible ways.
Burning $40 million of your own product to protect the brand. That's a level of commitment to artificial scarcity that's almost impressive.
It's the logical endpoint of luxury branding. Exclusivity requires that the product not be accessible, and if destroying it is cheaper than managing a donation pipeline that might leak into secondary markets, the destruction happens.
Which makes the dumpster diver, in a weird way, a kind of market correction, reintroducing goods into circulation that the system deliberately removed.
An unlicensed market correction. The Federal Reserve of Trash.
Don't give yourself a title like that. It'll stick.
I'm the Federal Reserve of Trash now.
I'm going to regret this episode.
One more thing I want to mention, because the prompt asked about construction waste specifically as the jumping-off point. There's an entire parallel diving community focused on construction and demolition sites. They're looking for different things. Lumber, yes, but also vintage fixtures, architectural salvage, copper wiring, old-growth timber that can't be sourced new anymore. These divers tend to be more specialized. They know which eras of construction produced what kinds of salvageable materials. They know how to identify valuable wood species by site, and they often have relationships with demolition contractors who'll tip them off before a job.
It's not just one community. It's a constellation of overlapping subcultures organized around different waste streams.
The grocery divers, the retail divers, the construction salvage divers, the curb shoppers, the electronics recyclers who intercept e-waste, the book rescuers. They all share a basic orientation toward waste as a resource, but the specific knowledge, tools, and networks differ.
The prompt's question about where to find these people. If someone wanted to get started, where would you point them?
I'd say start on r/dumpsterdiving. Read the pinned guides and the wiki. Spend a couple weeks just reading posts to get a sense of what's normal and what's not. Then look for a regional Facebook group. And if there's a really, really free market in your area, go to one. That's the lowest stakes introduction. You're not diving, you're just seeing what the community has recovered and meeting people who can show you the ropes.
For the actual first dive?
Start with something low risk. A curbside find on a residential street. Then graduate to a bagel shop or bakery dumpster. Those tend to be clean and predictable. Grocery store dumpsters are the next step. And always go with someone who knows what they're doing the first time.
Dumpster diving has a tutorial mode.
It absolutely does. And the community is, in my experience, reading through these forums, surprisingly welcoming to newcomers who show respect for the code. Don't make a mess, don't blow up spots, don't take more than you need. Follow those rules and people will teach you.
That's a better ethical framework than a lot of paid communities manage. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1917, astronomers observing lunar libration from a makeshift observatory in Bhutan's Paro Valley documented a periodic wobble in the moon's visible face that had last been recorded by medieval Arab astronomers and was subsequently lost from Western star charts for over 400 years. The Bhutanese team's notes were themselves misplaced in a Kathmandu archive and only rediscovered in 2019.
The moon wobble was found. Lost. Found again. Lost again. And then found a third time.
At some point, the moon has to take some responsibility for its own documentation.
This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the ship running. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you're listening. It helps people find the show. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.